This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
I felt good. I loved it, you know, being out there with the guys. It's much better than just being by myself on the ice or, you know, with a couple guys. It's the whole team. It's just, I just wanted to get out of there just to see where I'm at speed-wise and not just the legs, but like thinking and stuff like that.
It's always the goal, make the playoffs. We've done it in so many years in a row, so it's a really good feeling, but now we have to make sure our game is on the point, you know, we're doing the right things before the playoffs, so everything's going to be prepared for the playoffs games and going to be in a good spirit.
I think we keyed in on certain things. We made a little tweaks in the defensive zone. I think that maybe sparked some things. I don't know if there's one exact moment. I think the trade deadline was a big moment for our group too, to bring in some guys, to have that faith from the management group that we still wanted to add, that they still believed in us, and the caliber of players that we got. That certainly created a spark, and we've played really well since then.
There's so many factors that go into sitting here saying, well, let's just sit these guys out, because there's a negative effect to it too. And in, you know, my previous history, just letting the guys go do their thing and keeping, you know, the structure and the schedule and everything they do as close to normal as possible is always probably worked the best for us.
Yeah, it does, Coop. Lightning taking on the Blue Jackets tonight. All of the action you can listen to here on Lightning Radio. I am Greg Linnelli, the radio voice of the Lightning. Dave Mishkin is with me. Steve Versnick is our executive producer. But Mish, we also have a very special guest joining us at the top of the hour.
Yeah, this is the crossover day because Paul Kennedy of Bally Sports is coming on Lightning Radio, and later tonight I am going on Bally Sports.
And we are thrilled
to have
you.
It's like Freaky Friday on a Tuesday.
Arthur. Dave Mishkin,
yeah,
author.
Yeah, I'm doing the media tour. And so I had to include my buddy Paul Kennedy. Or I guess he's including me if I'm a guest on his show.
Thrilled to have you. Congratulations on this for
Thank
all
you.
You've accomplished. Three Stanley Cups and now your novel, which is fantastic.
I had a little bit more to do with the novel than the Stanley Cups, but I appreciate
it. Don't sell yourself short, Mish.
Yeah.
We're happy for you, Dave.
But we're happy to have you on. Talk
Thank
a little
you.
Lightning.
Can I take a moment to congratulate Greg and Annie Linnelli on the arrival of Enzo? A couple of weeks tardy, but we're thrilled for him, too.
Well,
and
Greg
and I appreciate
making a triumphant return to the booth tonight,
yeah,
too.
I'll be back tonight.
What an evening this has become.
What an evening.
He's going to be wearing
is
there,
this is April.
He's is there a tribute video?
Spring
is there a
flowers?
Video?
Are you wearing a baby Bjorn with Enzo? Along for the ride.
Wow.
Start him young, my friend. Start him
Why
young.
Why not? Do I get a tribute video?
Spectacular. And the Bolts return home in triumph, having secured a playoff position.
I don't think you get a tribute video if you remain with the same organization. It was if, like, you're going back to Pittsburgh, maybe. They would do a tribute
I
video.
I think we need to have a banner. We
Duquesne.
Have the Marty. We have the
Duquesne.
Marty 26 and the Vinny LeCavalier number 4. And now we need to have Mishkin Blind Squirrel next to it. For every novel, you get a banner out front. Don't you think?
I like it.
It's fitting like it. And proper in front of 19,000 here in Amalie Arena.
Anyway.
You know, PK, I wanted to ask you.
I've never seen Dave blush, but he is. But
it doesn't happen often.
Him.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
The
it
Yale
doesn't
graduate,
often.
You know, the education rises to the surface. That's the intellect.
The intellect, that's true.
I can't spell Yale. But.
And by the way, Fox 13 came out. They were gracious enough to do a story, or that they're going to be running the interview that I did with Kevin O'Donnell this morning on their newscast tonight. So Jeff Tewksbury, who usually has to hold the camera, although he did set up a tripod today, so he's a smart man, because both Kevin and I have been known to talk. So it took a little while. But Tewks is with this device. He's like sticking it right in our faces for more B-roll or something.
Get
and
used I to the paparazzi.
He reminds me of Mr.
Get used
Spock
to the paparazzi, Dave.
Remember Mr. Spock with his like little device that sensed the atmosphere or whatever?
This is going to be like James Michener or Pat Conroy. Get used to the cameras, Dave. They'll be coming for you. You'll be
anyway,
walking
to
a bookstore, and there will be your book tour. Dave Mishkin over America began in Tampa, and we were there. We're all thrilled.
So thank you to Fox 13 for coming on out. I think he's done now. He gave us the thumbs up. Now we can actually get down to business and talk Lightning Blue Jackets.
Did I tell you I loved Fox 13?
You asked a very good question of John Cooper this morning. Do you remember what you asked?
What's your favorite color?
Well, no, it was after that.
Do you like the Lightning as much as I do?
It was not that. It was, what do you hope to accomplish from these last five games? I thought that was a great question.
You know what? On the surface, simple, but with this roster, five games, 20 skaters, my first thought is coming at it from the back end. You don't want to lose anybody, but what do you wish to accomplish? And what can you accomplish? You were going to be 99% correct, Greg, Dave. You're going to be in the top wild card position a week from now when it is set for the postseason. True?
Yeah. He mentioned health, too. I mean, he mentioned a few things, but he's like, you want to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But he also said, and that was the soundbite that we played at the top of the show, you can't sit players out because you're afraid they're going to get injured, because there is a negative effect with having players not play regularly as you get ready for the playoffs.
Case in point, 88, the big cat, starts in goal this evening. He was in the starter's net at the morning skate.
Yeah.
So, if you're starting Vazzy, the preeminent player for this franchise in terms of long-term success, I still believe that the sun rises and sets on his ability to keep the puck out of the net.
And it is, I don't know how much you believe in this, PK, a team playing well heading into the playoffs, if that materializes and ends up helping them make a deep run, because we've seen the Lightning maybe not have that great of an end to the regular season and win cups. But I think considering where the team was earlier in the year compared to now, especially since the trade deadline, it does feel like a different team, doesn't it?
It does to me. What is the one team in the East one would not wish to play? I would say coming out of the Pittsburgh game on Saturday, even though that you did not win, that third period reminded us all this is a team with extraordinary firepower, remarkable skill, record-smashing seasons out of a number of players, and the big cat is back in Vasilevsky. This is a team that could win any series right now. So, and we will, and by coincidence, Columbus is here to remind us 2019, what does the first 82 truly mean? Well, right now, if the playoffs started today, they are peaked. But we have to wait another week, and we have to play five games between now and then.
So it's been a few years since regional TV got anything more than the first round. I remember in 04, Rick and Chief were doing the second round in Montreal, and then it went straight national.
Sure.
Then they made it just the first round. So you're going to get some games on Bally in the first round. You may not get all the games in the first round. What is the level of understanding it is what it is, and this is the way the world works, but what is the level of frustration at covering this team for close to 82, and then when the games ramp up in importance, you're kind of, oh, you're off tonight?
Period.
Period. That's a question. Like, yeah. What's the level of frustration
let me say this.
In your camp?
If I could be so bold as to speak for Dave Randorf and Brian Engblom, who I believe are an extraordinary broadcast tandem for our network. They're just phenomenal. I believe with all my heart, with the passion that they hold, they would want to cover every game they could. They have both done national networks. I do believe that they would be as good or better than most every combination on any national telecast, especially with the Lightning. They're, I'll use this word again, extraordinary with their insights, their work ethic. But sure, when you have to sit and watch, that is, if they told you, Dave, you've done this whole season and now you cannot do a game. However, our shoulder programming on Bally Sports, if I could, will still be involved. We do shows, post-game shows, pre-game shows, as much as we can within the confines and the restrictions of the National Hockey League. We would like to do as many games as we could, but that's the realities of it, of where we are right now. Does that help? Okay. Does that answer?
Yeah, that's a great answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, I really do believe, I think you are phenomenal. I love listening to you. And if when you worked with Brian over the weekend, and when you work with Phil, the founding father, am I the only one that dabs a fist on his statue when I come across Thunder Alley, having parked my car every morning?
Definitely not.
Good morning, Phil. Boom. And I hit that. Just wonderfully talented. Greg, am I right, Greg? It's just the best.
Oh, yeah.
We're at an extremely high level. And so, that being said, Gabby, too, and everyone, our producers and directors, all the people, you see two or three people on the air, we have 20 other people that pour their hearts into this each and every night. You have a staff, producers, directors, statisticians that pour their hearts into this each and every night. It's a labor of love, and you want that love extended and recognized and carried forward throughout the playoffs.
There's no better time than the playoffs in hockey, and I think you would agree, PK, because unlike the regular season, it's there are no surprises, there are no secrets in a seven-game series, and that's why I actually think some teams are built for the regular season, some teams are built for the postseason, because, you know, one team may just match up well with one opponent on a given calendar evening, but then once you get into the playoffs, it comes down to depth, it comes down to skill set, and then I think it comes back down to, are you getting the right goaltending at the right time? Lightning have been able to check a lot of those boxes recently, and I feel like with the trades that were made that they have given themselves that opportunity again this year.
Yeah, they certainly have those two deals that Julian Brisebois was able to make. I'm impressed, if not surprised, at the difference that they've made. Dave, you speak to it, and what you've seen on a nightly basis, adding Duclair and Dumba to this, and what they have brought to this team. You don't know what you have until they've arrived, and look at what they've done for this team.
Well, they've not only contributed, I think that they have allowed the rest of the lineup to slot into a way that makes sense and also has benefited Tampa Bay, so that Nick Paul is now settled as the third line center, often playing with AC Mononchafy. That has been a line that has caused some problems for the opposition, and Nick Paul is now ensconced in that role, and he's been playing it pretty much every single game since Duclair arrived, with the exception of the one game when, you know, they were missing Cirelli and Janot, so they went 11-7. And even within that game, the one Saturday in Pittsburgh, when the Lightning needed to kind of make a push, he put Paul back with AC Mononchafy. Dumba has slotted into the top six, and they've been very happy with kind of how they've distributed that. Now, they've had a little bit more turnover on D, in that, you know, Lilleberg was back up, sat a little bit, then he was in. DeHaan was out. Hayden Fleury was coming back from injury. Fleury got injured again. But adding a guy who can be counted on to play between 18 and 22 minutes a night, talking about Dumba, I think has helped the rest of the D core.
And play with Lilleberg. Lilleberg, yes, has the advantage of that.
And they'll be veteran together tonight,
they'll
looks
be,
like.
They'll be together, absolutely. And so with the absence, too, of Mikhail Sergachev, although he's returned to skate and it was wonderful to see him in a non-contact sweater and all, the reality is that he will not play in this postseason. But to have your five games now to set your six and to set your 12 up front, I would think from the coaching staff perspective and from the front office's perspective, that is what best case you wish to achieve in the next week.
Paul Kennedy joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio. What more can you say about the year Kucherov is having? And one of the things Mish and I have discussed, PK, about his MVP chances, is the fact that I think a lot of people had the Lightning not in a great spot before the season began. Oftentimes that can dictate who gets more votes than not, based off of somebody's prediction that goes wrong. You've seen a lot of great players come through here. The year he's having is incredible, not only individually, but I do think it's helped elevate the Lightning during some times this year when it's been a little shaky.
Glance at the spread between he and the second leading scorer for Tampa Bay. What is that, 40 points?
Points at 85, Kuz is at 136. That's a gap of, what, 51 points.
For the most outstanding player who means the most to his team, carrying a franchise. Now, if you ask our colleagues in other markets, particularly around Edmonton or Denver, Colorado, I don't know that in large measure, to be honest with you, that they believe that carries much weight. The discussions I heard, SiriusXM the other day was talking about Sidney Crosby and the charge that he is on in lifting Pittsburgh into contention once again when they looked as if their season had concluded, that he deserves Hart Trophy consideration. And I was aghast at something like that. Because here is Cooch having a record-smashing year, most assists by a winger in the history of the National Hockey League, already with 10 more points than he had the year he won the Ross and the Hart, and carrying this team now that looked as if it were 50-50 at best at New Year's and making the postseason. And now they've secured a playoff berth with a week to go and will be a very difficult out. He's been phenomenal. And I don't believe his candidacy is as strong as we would want it to be. It seems to be, as they said in the making of Casablanca, round up the usual suspects, that's going to be the list of who the votes go to. And I can't, if you have a theory on this, I'd love to hear it. I can't quite put my thumb as to why he would not win the Hart this year along with the Ross. Does the skater who wins the Ross almost automatically win the Hart? Isn't that the way it should be? Or the Lindsay? What do you see here, Greg, Dave, in the way that this is going to go, tracking with 15 periods of play remaining to build his resume?
Well, we've chatted about this. The Lindsay Award is voted on by the players. The Hart Trophy is voted on by the writers. The Art Ross is voted on by nobody. That's in black and white, the scoring leader for the NHL during the regular season.
The truth. The truth is the truth.
Yeah, and I wonder if the players have a more accurate read on this. I've been talking to some other people who cover different teams. I chatted with the Pittsburgh guys actually before the game on Saturday about it. And somebody made the point that, yeah, well, this particular player gave me a cheap shot in game 47, so I'm not going to vote for him. And that's fair. But I also think the players have as much of a feel for the pulse of, we're really talking about the most impactful player. The most impactful player is probably the way of threading the needle between the player who has accumulated the most points and the player is also the most valuable to his team. Because they're different, right? But impactful means that you're producing a lot and you're having a huge impact on your team's success. And I don't know. I think that the players maybe have a better feel for that. So I'll be curious to see if we have different winners of the Lindsay and the Hart this year. I didn't really answer your question.
No, and you answered it spot on, and that's a major reason why the men on the ice know. That gets us back to who should vote on the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Who selects the honorees? Why not have the players pick them all? Everything should be the players, perhaps, instead of writers, observers, media types.
And this probably, I'm guessing, this probably goes back to when there were six teams. And so if you were a media member, first of all, there were fewer media members. And second of all, if you were a media member, you were maybe covering your team, but you were seeing the other five teams a lot, right? Maybe I'm wrong about this, but it would make sense to have somebody who views the players in the league frequently, particularly in person, to get a sense of who is the most valuable. Now we got 32 teams.
Right.
I mean, if you're a writer, most writers are pretty myopic in terms of the team they are covering. I can speak personally, like, I know way more about the Lightning than I do about the Seattle Kraken. I mean,
Even though we have the benefit of national radio and global radio and global TV, and you can watch any team any night that you wish to, you can either stream them or find them on some carrier.
Yeah. So I don't know if with 32 teams, if we have a truly equitable way of determining a fair vote or a vote that takes into account the fact that you're going to see some players more than others. But I don't know that Kucherov is a slam dunk.
I think
McDavid and MacKinnon and Matthews and Crosby. I think Crosby, if the Penguins get in the playoffs, should get votes. The question is who's going to get the most first-place votes or who's going to get the most first- and second-place votes. And I think that player is the player who is going to win. You get 10 points for a first-place vote, 7 points for a second-place vote. This is going to be a split vote. I don't think Kuch is going to be like fifth on everyone's ballot or not on. Kuch is going to be on people's ballots. The question is he going to be third on most people's ballots?
Are you saying because there are so many worthy candidates and there are four that you have just named?
Yeah.
And
I will say,
having
watched the Maple Leafs.
The second straight 60-goal season out of Austin Matthews.
The Lightning just played the Maple Leafs. Now, look, Mitch Marner is back. Marner missed about a month. He did not play in that game against the Lightning. It's one player. I mean, they have most of their lineup intact beyond Marner. It wasn't even close that Matthews was the best Maple Leaf on the ice. He was. So he's going to bump 70 goals this year. That could be a storyline, too, for this final regular season game. Lightning Maple Leafs. Is it possible Matthews comes in sitting at 69? Kind of like Stamkos in 2012 sitting at 59 going into that final game.
Going up to Winnipeg.
That'd be a great story. But I think you can make the argument that Matthews has been extremely valuable to Toronto, even though the Maple Leafs pretty much throughout the year have never been in jeopardy of missing the playoffs, unlike the Lightning. Maybe that should carry weight with voters. Like without Kucherov, the Lightning missed the playoffs. Without Matthews, do the Maple Leafs miss the playoffs? Do they? Probably not, based on the season they've had and where they are vis-a-vis some of the other teams. But you can make the argument that Matthews has been extremely valuable to Toronto. I think that that's why we're going to see these different players getting votes.
When is the last time in this league a skater's had 150 points?
I agree with you. And look,
he needs 12 points over 5 games. You know, the last time a winger has ever had, what, he'll have 90 assists. He's got 90 assists now? Never.
You know who's the most valuable person on the Edmonton Oilers this year? Chris Knobloch, the coach. I'm giving really strong consideration to including Knobloch as one of my 3 picks for coach of the year. The broadcasters
vote
on the Jack Adams. Because Connor McDavid was on this team when they were flailing in the first 6 weeks of the season. He was getting his points, not at the clip that he is now or subsequently, but they didn't start turning things around until they changed the head coach. So who was the most valuable to the Edmonton Oilers in terms of where they have finished?
Coincidental,
or where they finish
coincidental
the regular season?
In the fact that he was McDavid's junior coach?
But if we're going to say McDavid is the most valuable player.
You think that's why they brought him in?
Well, I mean, look, and he's a good coach.
That Ken knew exactly what he was doing.
I think so. But if you're going to make the argument, let's say a writer says, well, I think Connor McDavid should get my first place vote as most valuable player based on his production and where Edmonton finished, what I would say is, well, McDavid was producing points and the team was going absolutely nowhere.
Is this 1st of December or a little bit before that?
It was before that because he was the coach when the teams met in Amalie in mid-November and he had just taken over. So I think that the person most responsible for Edmonton's turnaround this year was the guy behind the bench. That's one person's opinion. But Draisaitl is also there. Zach Hyman has over 50 goals this year.
And nobody
like are they?
I would
are
need
they
to look at the stat
valuable?
Sheet to know that. Yeah. And I would like to say, oh, I knew that, but you don't readily think about that, do you? It's not top of mind. Maybe it is to you.
Yeah, McDavid doesn't have like the gap between McDavid and the other players on his team that have done a lot this year. The gap is smaller than it is for Kuch and Point, or even some of these other candidates. Let's say like the Matthews gap from I should look up. the next highest goal scorer on Toronto is very, very far behind Austin Matthews with his 65 or whatever he's at right now. So if we're going to use that as a determining factor for most valuable player, I think the McDavid argument is a harder one to make than some of these other guys. But if you're just going to say Connor McDavid is going to reach 100 assists this year, and that's only been done by three other players in the history of the NHL, then that is a really signature, remarkable accomplishment. Of course, Cooch could get there too.
Is this the most wonderful, competitive, fireworks-filled finish that the league has seen in some while in terms of goals, assists, and scoring, that you have as many candidates as you do offensively for this? Yes or no, Dave?
Well, I'm looking at the scoring summary right now.
We've got three over 130 right now. Do all three, McDavid.
136, 133, 130.
How about that? When's the last time that happened? Like maybe never?
So the gap between McDavid and Draisaitl in points is 28. We said it was, 51 between Kucherov and point. Draisaitl has 102 points.
That's a month for most players in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And good players, all-star players. 28 points in a month times six, that's a 120-point season.
Right. Now, on the other hand, the gap between Matthews and the next closest goal scorer on Toronto is 25. William Nylander has 40 goals. That's
Don't
a great
be afraid
season.
To pass the puck.
Well, Nylander has been doing the passing because he has 56 assists.
How many assists does 34 have? How many
37.
37.
Yeah. Look, he's having a heck of a year. And I think you can make the argument that Austin Matthews deserves consideration for MVP, even though it's
Absolutely.
Been mostly the other three guys.
Did he hit the post twice when you played them there last week?
I think Vasilevsky stopped a bunch of those, honestly. Well, I mean, what do you think, Greg? Like, we've made the argument about Crosby, and I think when you look at a player who has pulled his team back into the playoff mix, that argument holds water for Crosby. If they miss the playoffs, though, I think that's going to affect the number of votes.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Because with Crosby, he's not having as dynamic of a year as those players in front of him are. But he's having a good enough year that most people wrote Pittsburgh off this season, and he is impacting the game if you watch them on a regular basis to an extent that some of those other players are. And again, I think it's more about the expectations of where Pittsburgh was going to be heading into the season and what Crosby has done. I mean, basically, they've been a one-line team for a good portion of the year. And at his age, at 36, to hit 40 goals and to approach some of the all-time greats in this all-time scoring that he's going to achieve potentially this year, I think you could probably put him in the top five. PK, I have said that Kucherov, for me, gets my vote, not because we see him on a regular basis, although that helps, but it is because I don't think many people had the Lightning being a dangerous team heading into the playoffs. I actually think that narrative was, you know what? I think this is the decline of the Lightning, and while they may be a playoff team, they're not going to do much. And Kucherov put them on his back. He got some reinforcements at the trade deadline. All of a sudden, this becomes a team that you wanted to face maybe in the first round to a team that you really don't. And Kucherov's a big reason for that. So that's why he gets my vote. But I think you absolutely, if Pittsburgh gets in, you could make the argument it is some of Sidney Crosby's finest work considering the team that he is on. It's the oldest team in the league.
Yeah, and him in his 19th season to be able to do this, 19 years in the league, and he is a point-a-game player over 19 seasons.
Yeah, more
yeah,
than
that's
a point
incredible.
A game.
It's never been done, has it? It's
Gretzky.
99?
Mm-hmm. And Gretzky played more than 19 years, so there came a point where Gretzky was not able to maintain that. If I'm remembering right, 79-80?
Yeah, the
last
one
year
was last year
in New York,
right? WHA.
Yeah.
And then
I got to look up what year he didn't. It might have been his final year.
I think it was his final year, Mish.
Yeah.
Was he able to haul in anything at Coop's catch? I would like to know. Did he?
Well, somebody made a haul that he arrived at. Somebody reeled him in.
He was there. I looked over at the reception. Yeah. I was fortunate to be invited to the reception, and I looked over, and there was Wayne and Janet Gretzky standing at the reception.
Yep.
How about that? But he put on his T-shirt the next day and went out on a launch with the children and with
He and Cooper pretty tight. He was not quite at a point per game his final year. He had 62 points in 70 games. Interestingly,
in New York, this is with the Rangers.
With the Rangers. But his previous 2 years with the Rangers, he was over a point per game. The closest he came before that final season was the lockout-shortened 94-95 season. He was in L.A., 48 points in 48 games. He was right at a point per game. But the other years...
And how many years did he play in total?
Well, his first year in the NHL was 1979-80. His last year was 98-99. So that's 20 seasons.
Yeah. And that's right where Crosby is now. Amazing. Yeah. And Crosby
missed a year.
Crosby looks like he has another contract in him.
Actually, Crosby didn't miss a year because he came in after the lockout. He missed half a year like Gretzky.
And you had the strike.
And then he's
year.
Had injuries, too. Crosby has had injuries. But that hasn't affected his ability to eclipse a point per game.
He has an opportunity at another contract scoring 40 goals. Here is Steven Stamkos with another wonderful season. He is closing strong. Is Steven Stamkos, wouldn't you say? Elevating this team. I mean, every line, all four lines are rolling. And you mentioned the Paul line. What about the Whack Pack that looks like it's getting the fourth line that looks like it's getting Tanner Jeannot back?
Yeah, we didn't even mention that, Greg, that both Cirelli and Jeannot look like they're good to go
breaking
tonight.
News.
But Fleury is going to be out.
And Tanner Jeannot, right?
Yeah. I like the Lightning's 12-6 formation in that this 12-6 formation was the one they used when they were going on their excellent stretch in March when Jeannot returned from his second longer stint on the injured list, where you have Jeannot, Mott, Glendening, what do you call them, the whack pack.
Yeah, they'll make it they'd be a hard line to play against.
Yeah, and the Paul line that we talked about with Jaffe and AC Mott. And then after Duclair started with Stamkos and Cirelli, he moved with Point and Kucherov. So you have Duclair with Point and Kucherov and Stamkos, Cirelli, and Hagel. That's been a very effective lineup for the Lightning. That configuration of those 12 forwards in those four lines. And I think you've got chemistry with all of those different lines. So hopefully they can keep it going. But I'm not surprised that once Cirelli and Jeannot were cleared, that they went right back to that same configuration that they had before they started having some injury issues on the road trip.
PK, I'm wondering for you, and I know we'll let you go here in a little bit, but I'm curious.
Is there a parting gift, by the way? For appearing, you receive our undying gratitude and an autographed copy of Blind Squirrel.
You already got one of those.
Well, you can never have enough, right?
Give him another one. What the
That's
heck?
What
I can't wait to get mine.
By the way, I saw Braden Point's dad in the hallway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's like, hey, you have a book coming out. I'm like, yeah. And I had the book because I had it for the interview I did with Fox 13. So
here
I pulled it out. He's looking at it. I say, oh, okay. He's like, can I have this? I'm like, no, sorry.
You want to give it to him? Braden Point's dad?
I understand that.
He came in from Alberta?
I'm in the red at the, like, I would love to be able to give everybody a book.
That's Braden Point's dad.
I know.
I'll give you the money.
You want a book?
He was kind of like, he was kidding. He's like handing it back. He's like, sure, I can't keep
21
this.
Blue, Braden Point.
I know.
He's had a wonderful charge.
My wife would say, you can't just give books to everyone. We have bills due. Aren't you aware that there is a financial implication?
You know what's going to happen, Greg?
I paid for those books.
Is there going to be food on my table, honey?
You know what's going to happen here?
What's
He's going to opt this to Hollywood, sign a contract. Movie's going to be
and
a big hit.
I'll be like Oprah. Everybody gets a book.
And then he'll be flying in on game day on his private jet.
Who would play the lead actor, Mish, if you had to? Who would play the lead actor?
I have no idea. Not me, I can tell you that.
Glenn Powell. Glenn Powell.
I like
Perfect.
That.
Perfect one. I watched Love Story the other night.
So. There's a little hockey angle. Right?
See, there you go. But he was a Harvard guy, not a Yale.
That's true.
We won't hold that against them.
No, we don't. I really am thrilled, so I don't want to make light of all of this.
You know, there is a famous line in Love Story. Was it Ally McGraw? Is
that Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Right. So she was asked about that line. She's like, I never really understood what that meant. Like, and she's like, I'm not sure I believe that it's true anyway. Meaning that if you love someone, you should be able to tell them that you're sorry if you do something to hurt them, right? I think that was her point. But maybe the writer of the line
also
had something
means
other.
You never do anything to hurt someone intentionally. Greg, what do you think?
I think that's fair.
The love means never having to say you're sorry. I'm just going to treat you like garbage.
The father of all Linnellis. Tonight on Bally, he's going to turn to me and say, Paul, you know, love means never having to say you're sorry. That's the theme of this.
That'd be tremendous. So,
the blind squirrel.
Well, PK, we'll let you go.
Yes, on that note.
You got to prep. You've got to prep.
Congratulations to you and Annie. This is just wonderful.
Thank you, sir.
Are you going to bring
Enzo
to a game?
Call.
You're going to bring Enzo to a game?
At some point, you know, at some point we'll get him in there, and Phil will ask him, hey, how's the view up here?
Prego. Like you're Italian, I'm Italian. That'll
That's
be
right.
Phil.
He'll love him. He'll hold him maybe while he's doing the game.
Little number seven jersey. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, God bless
you. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, PK.
And I'll be on your show tonight.
I'm looking forward to it. I got to go practice my ad-libs. So, see you later.
You don't need practice. All right, there he goes. The great Paul Kennedy joining us here on the broadcast. Always great to catch up with
you. I
PK.
Know. He made me feel a little badly there. I felt badly anyway, but...
About what? Braden points
yeah,
out.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of like, it's the one book I brought today. I kind of need to get this one back from you. I'm sorry. He's like, I'm going to order it on Amazon. Don't worry. So I'm like, okay, thank you.
Listen,
he is a great guy. So, like, I've gotten to know some of the dads, particularly the ones that have had their sons playing for the Lightning for a while, through the dad's trips, because they are usually on the bus that we are on, right? Or they're at the skate and we sit with them and chat with them. And just like Braden Point is an A-plus person, you know where he gets it from. His dad
yeah.
is awesome.
Well, that's great to hear.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I'm sure Braden Point can give his dad a nice check and buy a bunch of those books if he really
I suppose that's true,
wanted
right?
to. If he really wanted to.
Yes.
But that's great to hear. I mean, do you find that too? Just they always say like hockey players are the best guys. But
well, I
think,
it's
it comes,
the culture of the sport because yeah. if you're not a good guy, it kind of gets beat out of you at a young age because the culture of the room is such that no I in team, right? And I think that there is that element in the sport. Sometimes to its own detriment. I think that the marketing people would like there to be a little bit more I in team for some of the top flight players. But I just think it's not in their DNA. And usually younger players follow the lead of the older players, and the older players have learned from players when they were coming into the league how to act and how to comport yourself. I mean, it used to be that the idea was that so many NHLers came from kind of humble backgrounds in, you know, rural Canada, and there is still that. Like, that is true, even if they're not in rural Canada. You know, Canadians are... They are a polite people. They are, right? And I think that comes through, but it's not like NHLers are only from Canada anymore. They're from all over the world. But I still
That's
think
true.
That you find kind of the hockey player's demeanor and personality to be very agreeable and friendly and approachable.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Everything you say about them. And, you know, anytime they're interviewed, it feels like they are just humble. And
yeah.
It's usually give credit to the team and... You know, let's move on and get to the next game. Speaking of which, let's maybe dive into this. I think it's hard talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's probably better playing against the team that you're supposed to beat rather than talk about one, because on paper, Dave, this is a mismatch. But we know you can't take teams
yeah.
lightly. I am curious, you know, based off of the nice run the Lightning have had here, what does this game look like tonight?
Well, they shouldn't be as flat. And by flat, I mean they exhaled. They did on Saturday for the first two periods. I don't think that that should be an excuse for them tonight. Now, could it be that there's really not a lot to play for? And the opposition is not necessarily like – they're not the Florida Panthers or the Boston Bruins who are going to get your blood boiling, right? But the Blue Jackets bit the Lightning in the rear end earlier this year and had a come-from-behind win. And the Lightning had a 3-0 lead in the second meeting. Both games were played in Columbus, and the Jackets scored two goals in the third period and had a chance to tie it before the Lightning scored an empty netter. So the games have been close. Now, the Columbus teams that the Lightning saw earlier this year, they do not look exactly the same. They've made some moves. They've lost some guys to injury. They've called up some young players from the minors. Boone Jenner, he's a terrific player, having a family tragedy. He and his wife had a stillborn child. So that's tragic news for him. He's taken a leave of absence, understandably so. So he is not playing. He's not been playing. He won't play tonight. But, you know, like, that's a pretty important player. You're taking off their lineup. Both goalies are hurt right now. So they have Jet Greaves and Malcolm Subban as the two goalies. So, look, it's a different look of a Columbus team. But I think I mentioned, like, they beat Philly at home. They beat Colorado at home. Like, they have some quality wins recently. So the Lightning have to be on their toes and be ready to play tonight. Hopefully they will be.
And for those joining, why don't we give everybody an update on who's going to be in and who's going to be out tonight?
Yeah, so it looks like Janot and Cirelli are back in. Hayden Fleury is not.
Okay.
So I think the Lightning are going to go with 12-6, with the extras being Fleury is an injured scratch, and then DeHaan, Watson, and Sherry as healthy extras, with Matt Tompkins backing up Vasilevsky. So Johansson is still day-to-day. I saw him in the hallway, though, kind of like doing the goalie exercises, like banging a ball against the wall and catching it. So, I mean, he's doing what he can without being on the ice. So I was like, sorry to walk past you while you're throwing the ball against the wall. He's like, no, that's okay. So that's your lineup. And I think what I just spelled out about the 12 forwards, that's the way it's going to play out tonight. Those are going to be your four lines. And I think Dumba's going to be with Lilleberg, and Pervix is going to be back on the left side playing with Chernak. That's how they ran the combos on D with Radish and Hedman.
Okay. And we heard from Sergachev, I think, in the open, didn't we?
Yeah, so he was out with the red no-contact jersey both yesterday and today. But, I mean, this is one of those situations. He's on the ice, but he is a long, long way from being close back to returning. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of gives you an idea of how things are transpiring tonight for the Lightning. Anthony says the Hart argument is very close. Some interesting things to look at. Points against the strength of the opponent. I'm not 100% sure about accuracy, but Cooch scored a lot against the top teams. And then he does a screenshot of McDavid, McKinnon, and Kucherov, and it kind of gives a breakdown of the opponents and where they rank. And I guess Cooch is averaging 1.92 points per game against teams 1 through 5, and then 6 through 10, partner, 2.25.
I don't know.
Does that resonate?
I understand what he's saying, and I actually saw somebody say, you know, like in the West you have these four teams, although Arizona has had its moments this year. I mean, they had a big comeback against Vegas the other night. They were down 4-1 in the third, and they scored six unanswered goals and won 7-4. So, look, on any given night, right, San Jose has not gone winless this year. They have some wins. But I saw an argument that, you know, McDavid and McKinnon are getting the Sharks and the Ducks and the Blackhawks and the Coyotes. All right. Well, if they're not in the same division, they're playing – those teams three times. The Lightning played them twice. So, I mean, it's not like the Edmonton Oilers played the Blackhawks eight times and the Lightning played the Blackhawks twice, and Draisaitl and McDavid had like an average of 3.5 points a game in their eight games against the Blackhawks. That has not been the case. It's not like 2021 when you had play only within your division. And what was it? Edmonton went 9-0 against Ottawa that year.
Yeah, right, right.
So this is – it's harder to – I think it's harder to make that comparison. And you never know, like maybe you're catching a team at the end of a long road trip, or, you know, you're catching them in the second half of a back-to-back. And I mean, the Lightning lost to Chicago earlier this year. The Lightning lost in Arizona earlier this year. The Lightning played Anaheim and Kucherov had no points. Remember, we had that, whoever it was, we heard about the national reporter. I don't even know if they're a writer or a podcast or whatever. It was like, well, this just goes to show that Kucherov can't do anything without Braden Point, because Braden Point missed the game at Anaheim and Kucherov had no points, which is a silly argument. But, you know, the strength of schedule to determine, well, he's the most valuable because he had more points against tougher teams, I think is a hard argument to make stick. But that's one person's opinion. Maybe a vote. I don't have a vote. So maybe some of the writers will look at those same numbers and say, well, this is impressive that Kucherov did really well against the top teams.
Who knows? I don't know what people look at. I think you have to have an idea, though, of how the team was doing.
Yeah.
You need to have a good pulse on it. I don't know if the national media can. I think some do. And I you know where I think some reporters who cover the league in general get by is they talk to people.
Right.
Sometimes you got to see with your eyes, though. You just do. Which is one of the reasons why we've made the argument that Kucherov should be, we think, maybe in the forefront to win the MVP, but also why you can make an argument Sidney Crosby should get votes.
I think Crosby will get votes. I would be flabbergasted if Crosby wins it. I think Crosby's winning it.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I think he'll get votes. And remember, they only announced the top three, so we'll have to wait for the official, like, the announcement of the winner, then they release the full votes. So you can actually see who the top five were.
There have been a couple of instances where I've...
But I say top five because you get... The writers are allowed to put in five names. But we only see the top three.
Does a player who miss a whole season and their team tanks, even though they had high expectations, should they get votes? I mean, you could almost make that logical case.
Yeah.
Jay says, my guess is that the Islanders and Red Wings get Metro 3 and Wild Card 2. What do you guys think?
That is where the standings are right now.
Yeah, he says the Penguins have no margin for error. The Capitals and Flyers have been playing like crap lately.
So the one thing I will say about Pittsburgh is they still have a head-to-head with Detroit. They have a head-to-head with the Islanders.
Yeah.
And that could change that dynamic significantly. I believe the game against Detroit is in Pittsburgh. The game against the Islanders is at Islanders. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay. That is correct.
And, you know, the Capitals and the Flyers have struggled. They have. But a win or two changes things drastically. Flyers are at Montreal tonight. And Washington has a big game at Detroit. So do we know for certain that Detroit is going to win that game?
And the Rangers are at the Islanders.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, you know, he was talking about the Flyers and the Caps. So how confident are you that Detroit's winning that game tonight? I mean, they're probably favored, but has Detroit inspired so much confidence that you're like, they're in wild card two, they have a chance to solidify their position, they get Washington at home, they're going to hammer the Capitals. Right. Do you believe that? I mean, I don't know that that's going to happen going in.
No.
I could see a scenario in which Washington wins that game. So maybe then we change our feeling about it. Do not be a prisoner, your expression, Greg, do not be a prisoner of the moment or recent history. Yes, the Caps and Flyers have struggled more recently, but they still have some runway left to change their trajectory. And at least as it relates to the Flyers, they have what I would call, even though they recently lost to Montreal, interesting, they played two games at Montreal within the last couple of weeks of the regular season. That is a winnable game for the Flyers.
Yeah.
Now, they blew a winnable game where they lost to Columbus recently. But I'm not willing to say that they are definitely out of it and they're going to lose all their remaining games. Maybe they will, but I don't feel confident saying that. So he asked, what is our opinion? I have no idea. Because I think a lot of these questions have to get answered in some of the head-to-heads.
I think you can make a case, too, that Pittsburgh is playing the best out of those teams right now. But you also know they have some flaws, and does that change with the competition remaining? That I don't know.
Don't the Flyers and Caps play each other as well in their last game? I don't know if it's the same day as that Pittsburgh Islander game, but that, you know, that could be pretty interesting also. I do know because we just saw Montreal. The Red Wings, excuse me, finished their last two games are against Montreal.
Okay.
So if they are in the wild card spot and they blow it in the last two games by not winning both those games against Montreal, that is going to be a very tough pill for the Red Wings to swallow. But they may not be in wild card two still by the time those games happen.
Hard to gauge who the best team is out of that bunch.
And which two will get in.
Yeah.
That's really what he was asking. Yeah, here's Detroit's remaining schedule. Excuse me. At Pittsburgh, at Toronto, two tough games. Then home Montreal, at Montreal. And a back-to-back for both teams, obviously. They finish on Tuesday the 16th also.
Yeah.
Because that Pittsburgh Islander game I know is Wednesday because we looked at that when the Lightning play the Leafs. Remember, we were looking at that.
Yeah, we were. This comes from NHL, but in MS Paint. What's going on with JoJo? Injured during practice? Hope he's okay.
Yeah, I mentioned that I saw him doing some hand-eye work in the hallway. I don't know. I wasn't at the practice in which he got hurt, and the people that were at presumably the practice in which he got hurt. Nobody said Johansson looks like he just injured himself. So it doesn't seem to be overly serious, but clearly it's serious enough that Tompkins has been up for a while now since the road trip began.
Yeah, you wonder if it is a little more nagging. Maybe that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony says, Dave, it's points per game, not total points. What was he referring to?
The Gretzky thing?
Maybe.
Sorry, I misspoke. But you're averaging more than a point per game played. So yeah, the years that Crosby only played half a season, he averaged, I mean, I guess it's the same, isn't it? If you have more points than games played, you're averaging more than 1 point per game.
That would be correct.
But in the year that I was talking about with Gretzky, 94-95, he played all 48 games because it was a 48-game regular season, and he had 48 points. That was as close as he came until his final season and not being at a point per game.
That makes sense.
Maybe he's talking about something else.
I don't know.
In which case,
clarify.
I apologize.
Yeah, we clarify. Anthony says, one more argument not in Kucherov's favor is his war stats, wins above replacements, and all the defense talk. So I guess he's at...
Yeah, war of wins above replacement. I mean, that to me is just...
garbage.
I mean, some that's getting so tough. Into the weeds on this analytics stuff, which... and I'm not like the cranky old man in the rocking chair. Maybe people think I am. I'm really not. Like, I will accept,
if you don't do
that. Yeah,
I will
you are definitely more the cranky That's old fine. Man in the rocking chair.
That's fine.
You know, the amount of sleep you've had recently, though, you probably have a good excuse for that. Look, I know baseball does this, wins above replacement, and I guess it's kind of easy to say, well, the shortstop in 100 games committed one error, and his replacement in the next 30 games committed 8 errors. Like, you know, like you can kind of look at it that way. Baseball, I think, is a sport that is well suited to some of these more advanced
analytics
stats. Yeah. And I mean, I think that I don't know the sport as well as people who cover the sport. All I'm saying is, what on earth is the methodology to determine wins above replacement? Seriously. If you take any of these top guys out of the lineup, their teams will be worse. I mean, is Mitch Marner going to be in contention for MVP? No. But I just said, I felt the Maple Leafs missed Mitch Marner. His presence was missed on the ice because they were missing a guy who can make plays. And some of the plays that he would make would benefit his teammates. His teammates were hurt by the fact that I'm really talking about like Matthews or Nylander, right? But, like, there was a little bit of finish missing from Toronto's game against the Lightning when they met last week. And I think some of that finish would have been there had Mitch Marner been available. So what does that mean for this war, win? I can't call war, wins above replacement. What does that even mean? I understand what it means. You're saying that if you pull this player out, how much worse is the team? I don't know how you can quantify that with a number or a ranking. But thank you for sharing. I'll get out of my rocking chair right now and squeeze the crank out of my personality.
Well, and it's fun to have that debate. If you want to go by that metric, theoretically, again, if a player is lost for the whole year and they don't make the playoffs, you can make an argument, hey, that's the true value of that player being in the lineup. I mean, it really is. People are kind of like, well, you got to play. Yeah, it's true. But in theory, that's actually the greatest barometer. How well do you do if this guy's out of the lineup for the whole season?
And what about the argument that in a star player's absence, other guys actually elevate their game? I think that that is a real thing. I think that happens. Maybe they can't sustain it forever, but or for a long period of time.
You know who did that for a long time? Malkin. When Crosby was out.
Yeah.
Those moments when Crosby was injured, Malkin oftentimes was the best player on the ice, and you could have made the case for a short period of time was the best player in the league when Crosby was out. Guys do that. There's no question, but it's hard to quantify, to your point.
I think it's a hard thing to put into a number or a ranking, but clearly they exist. What was the other thing you mentioned besides the war that's working
defense,
against Cooch?
I think defense.
Yeah, so look, his plus-minus isn't as high as some other players' plus-minus. But, you know, that is taking into account, or not taking into account, power play success.
Yeah.
So his lower plus-minus is due in part to he has been on the ice maybe for more goals against 5-on-5 than some of these other guys. Fair enough. But he has also done more on the power play than all of those other players. And I'm going to tie this back into the MVP argument. Where would the Lightning be without their power play this year? Would they be a playoff team if they didn't have a power play? I mean, they're number one. But let's say top 10 or even top 5. Let's say if they didn't have a top 5 power play in the NHL, let's say instead of 29.5%, they were at 22%. Take all those goals off the board. Are they a playoff team this year? If the answer is no, then you're saying the power play had a big role in getting the Lightning into the playoffs. Well, if the power play had a big role in getting the Lightning into the playoffs, who is the engine of that power play? We were looking it up. Phil Bork and I were looking it up. Pittsburgh broadcaster before the game, because he was talking about the point gap between Point and Kucherov, and I said, you know, Point has kind of taken one from the team this year to some extent on the power play because he's in the most dangerous position on the ice. Penalty kill units are looking to take him away. So Kucherov is going elsewhere with the puck. So Point has not gotten as many power play points, certainly as Kucherov, but also there's a reason for that. But he has been very impactful in that it has opened up, let's say, Hedman and Stamkos more. So when we were looking at it, Cooch had 49 power play points of, I think it was 67 power play goals. The Lightning right now are at 69 power play goals, and Cooch is at 51 power play points. So whoever can do the quick math, 51... Cooch has been in on 51 of 69 goals scored by the Lightning on the power play. Point, by comparison, has been in on 31 of them. So Point has been in on less than half of the goals the Lightning have scored in the power play in terms of points. Kucherov, whatever that average is, Steve is probably doing it in his head because he's a math whiz, but 51 out of 69. So there have only been 18 power play goals scored this year by the Lightning overall in which Kucherov has not had a hand in the goal being scored by getting a point. That, to me, equates to value. I know that was kind of a long-winded argument, but
makes sense.
If we're going to say the Lightning are in the playoffs, at least in large part due to their power play, then you have to make the argument that the Lightning are in the playoffs in large part due to Kucherov, because their power play is where it is because of Kucherov, even though his plus minus is lower than these other candidates.
Yeah. That makes sense. Hey, that's it.
Hey, I'm making an MVP argument, even though I'm kind of glad I don't have a vote, because I think it would be a really hard one to make.
Agreed. A lot of good choices. There's no doubt about that. Well, partner, it's going to be fun tonight.
Yep.
I will see you guys in person.
Yes, looking
Lightning
forward
and
to
Blue
it.
Jackets. Yeah, it'll be good. See if the Lightning can get 2 points, and then we'll be back at it again in this setting tomorrow, noon to one. Thanks to Paul Kennedy as well for hopping on. We always appreciate him.
Of
All right,
course.
Partner. I'll catch you tonight.
See you tonight.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to you guys for listening. We always appreciate it. I am Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Radio.